Get ready for an all-new Hardline segment. It's time to step into the snake pit.
Nice. So I gave you guys a homework mission last week that...
No, we had a mission too.
You did. This is a little easier than these guys' mission. But your mission was to watch the new documentary that came out on Netflix called Surviving Black Hawk Down. And for those of a certain age, I would still say Black Hawk Down is a movie that you need to see just out of for historical significance, or a book you need to read. This documentary, though, is so much more eye-opening than I think the movie could ever be. It's 3 hours long, and for those who don't know what Black Hawk Down refers to, it's kind of the catchphrase for a skirmish, if you want to call it
if
that.
If you will.
A battle that took place in October of 1993 in Somalia. And
October 3rd.
Prior to that, Somalia was engaged in a civil war, and it was horrible on a humanitarian standpoint. Famine was rampant, and so George Bush ordered, at the time, was the president, and he ordered, the UN forces to go over there and make this a humanitarian effort where they're feeding these people, giving them supplies and medical supplies and all of this to survive this civil war. Well, that quickly shifted to a military event.
Yeah, a lot of the warring factions were turning on the peacekeeping UN forces.
Right.
And there were a lot of the UN forces that were killed. And so it became a more of a show of force that the UN forces needed to be backed up by U.S. military forces so they could do their work with the threat of the U.S. military there.
Yes. What's that, Ham?
Clinton, not Bush.
Well, Bush sent the original forces in, and then Clinton, he sent the U.N. Troops in there, or U.N. people in there. Sorry, Ham. That's okay. And then Clinton, whenever things got very escalated, Clinton was the one that sent in the forces. And this was all about a general over there in Somalia who was
Adib,
a super bad dude, Muhammad Adid, Farah Adid, that the mission then turned into, we've got to stop this guy. We've got to kill this guy. We have to stop him. We have to stop his lieutenants, everything. And so once this turned into a military operation, the U.S. Army Rangers were sent over there to basically execute the deal.
Yeah, and they had a military base on the beaches of Mogadishu.
Yeah.
And then it was like a two-mile drive into the heart of Mogadishu where Adid and all of his henchmen would meet in various places like hotels and civic buildings.
Right.
And so they were always trying to track his movements and figure out where he and his lieutenants were.
And as many military events that have happened in the last 30 years concerning the United States, as many of those as we've seen take place, for whatever reason, this is the one that sticks out because of the spectacular nature of the way it all ended over a two-day period.
Yeah, in fact, you know, it's no battle had killed as many U.S. troops since Vietnam. So just to put that in perspective, I mean, you're talking 1993. So over that stretch of time, like, this is the biggest loss of life. We lost 18 soldiers that day, or I guess in that 48-hour period, mm-hmm. 73 more wounded, and that was the biggest price paid all the way back to Nam.
It was such a huge story back in the day, and, you know, obviously with the book and the movie,
But man,
it became more sensationalized. But this documentary is so brilliant because Surviving Black Hawk Down, by the way, on Netflix, and it gets the cats that made it out of there alive, obviously. But then the most brilliant part of it is that the documentarians go over to Somalia and they find the people that were part of this military operation on their part, or civilian operation on their part, because their military seem to be just civilians.
Yeah, and can I just... I think that's worth focusing on what you're saying is dead on. This is a great documentary. This is an unbelievable story. But the ability to put this piece of television or whatever you want to call it together and to do it as they did, to tell that story and to somehow find those participants on both sides. Like, you can find the U.S. soldiers, probably. You're a U.S. company and you're putting this together. To find the eyewitnesses and the participants from the Somali side is...
It's pretty mind-blowing.
It's a 12 out of 10 when you talk about making television.
Yes.
Like, that is so hard and so expensive and so much time must have gone into that. I can't tell you how much respect I have for the people that did that.
Yeah, from the Somali side of the coin, they have multiple, like two or three guys, I believe, that were militia members that were in Adid's forces. There's the videographer. He was
one guy that had the video camera.
Yeah, he went from videotaping birthday parties and weddings to becoming a war photographer and sending tapes like on cargo jets to news organizations to get the footage out there.
Yeah.
To show what's really going on in Somalia. And then you also had, as you mentioned, Bob, civilians. Like a woman who was separated from her family, and the one of the helicopters went down right by her house, and she didn't know if her husband and kids had survived.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also had the man and woman who were in the home where the first crew, the first helicopter that went down, where they took refuge when the rescue operation went FUBAR and they had to just hole up. They just took over this residence, and this Somali family is just sitting there scared to death as they're caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, and they found all these people. And, you know, for the rah-rah Go America folks, it's a really interesting look at both sides of a battle. And the political side of both sides, and from the Somali side, this was in October, over a 2-day period when this went down. So back in July, initially when they said they had information where this Adid guy was, the U.S. forces did, and they go in and they take out like a couple of buildings. Well, they missed. They were fed bad information. And instead of taking out this horrible son of a bitch, they took out civilians. And they took out, most importantly, elders. They took out 70, 80, 90-year-old men who were just sitting up there. And that turned the Somalis from Go USA, thank you so much for what you're doing, trying to end this civil war, thanks for the food, thanks for the medical supplies, all that, to these people that were on the USA side. Instantly, they go over to Adid's side.
Yeah.
And so you understand why they're so pissed off at the United States. Because they had a mission that screwed up. The U.S. did. And so you have these people going, yeah, I immediately turned. And then it was all about, how do we get even?
Yeah.
How do we get even?
Killed my grandpa or
right.
Killed my dad or something.
And you understand,
yeah.
Finally, you know, whether it's any of these wars that we've been in, outside of Nazi Germany, there's always another side that has an excuse.
Yeah, and one of the Rangers that they talked to, the guy with the glasses,
yeah.
the rocker guy,
right?
He was my favorite guy in the whole doc.
What a dude!
He was a really, really thoughtful guy, but he lost his two best friends in the battle.
Yeah,
and he talks about how he was very cognizant of following orders and only engaging hostiles and trying his best to, you know, respect the locals and keep innocents out of harm's way. But then when he saw his two best friends get killed right in front of him, he said the switch just got flipped and he was just in a murderous rage.
Yeah.
Anyone that looked like any kind of a threat, he was taken out.
All right, let's come back here in 3 minutes, and we'll play some audio for you. Yes, we'll play some audio for you.
Carry this over, because I want to
talk
about it.
Thank you, Danny. We're talking about surviving Black Hawk Down, an amazing show. We'll get way deep into it next.
The Ticket.
Human being in Mogadishu's got a machine gun out the window trying to pop you, and you somehow, the majority of you survive. I know they lost a lot, but you survive. But it, yes, it's a race to get to that chopper first and to try to get him out of there. And in the meantime, they take down another chopper.
No, there's a similar story in Baghdad in the Iraqi war. And I'm trying to remember which one it was, but it definitely involves a convoy of Humvees going through enemy territory. And it's just complete chaos. What am I thinking about? I'm trying to remember because that was.
Are you thinking of Generation Kill?
No, there was a movie, but regardless, the chaos.
Iron Man.
Shut up. I swear. But the chaos and the hopelessness, and then you got guys wounded, and in this particular case, you know, it's leave no man behind. And so.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is like, you know, the wounded warrior spots that we run here on the station, they always talk about never leave a wounded warrior behind.
Or a
but
dead
they
body.
Were, yeah, they were like, don't leave a casualty. Don't leave a dead soldier behind.
Probably
we want to bring everyone back because they were going to be
probably,
strung up.
Yes, they knew what would happen to the dead bodies of American soldiers, and which actually did happen. But they put all the wounded and the dead in the Humvee, and now the living soldiers who were still fighting could not fit to get out of there.
Yeah, so they have to hike alongside the Humvees, and then the Humvees get to the first intersection and just gun it.
Because they're under fire.
Yeah, so they leave the guys behind.
And now the guys who are hiding behind them are totally exposed, and they're screwed again.
And this is the Mogadishu Mile.
Yes.
This is where that term comes from, where these Delta Force and Army Rangers, as you mentioned earlier, they all kind of converge, or a lot of them converge into this house, Mogadishu house, where these people are living, and this is their base and their fort. And they're like, well, this is it. Is that the cut we have here with the guy, the Delta Force guy is like, I'm dead.
I felt bad.
Well, it's about the family that's with them, and it's juxtaposition there.
I felt bad for them, you know, like, sorry. I'm sorry we're here, man. Sorry that they're shooting at us and it's destroying your house. Looking at faces, and then I started wondering, like, what do you do here? What's your job? I mean, you go to school. And I'm wondering, like, what's life like here? Little spikes of humanity in the center of killing people over and over again. Then you get a little spike of humanity. You're like, damn, I don't want to look at this. Let me go back to the window and shoot people. This is harder than shooting people. To try to put humanity into war. It's just not good.
That guy's so awesome in this, Delta Force guy.
He also looks like a guy you shouldn't mess with to this day.
Oh, my God.
You know,
scares the crap out of me.
I know. He kind of gave me, like, Ken Stabler vibes.
You know what?
A little bit, yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
No, it's just, Snake. I mean, how many times have we seen some version of that going back to World War One and World War Two that... Like, sometimes the worst thing a soldier can do is kind of realize the dudes on the other side love their girlfriends, too, and their moms and their babies. And
they're going to work the next day and all that.
Like the Christmas Day truce in World War One, where they ended up kind of playing soccer with the Germans. You know, it's this idea like, you know, these guys aren't that bad, you know. It's like, what are we doing out here? Shouldn't we all go home and hang out with our girlfriends again, but that's not what you signed up for, and that's not what the world's about, I guess. He's like, they're literally in a house with a newborn, and the mom is nursing the baby right around the corner, and this dude's unloading his gun to save his life into the streets of Mogadishu. I always want to say Mogadishu, and that's not right. But
and then they found the family whose house it was, and they found the baby that survived, who's now 30 years old.
Yes,
and they interviewed her. Dude, it's so good.
Like,
it's...
how do you do that? Making a documentary, like,
how about the guy though? The guy that he was the one that. You know, was, I don't want to say he was like the main lieutenant of Adid, the bad guy, but he flipped whenever the U.S., you know, bombed and killed a bunch of grandpas. He flipped and he's still pissed. That guy, like,
yeah.
He's like, look, they didn't realize that this is what we have been doing. He's like, they were babies. They brought their babies over, meaning the Army Rangers. They brought their 22-year-olds. We had been doing this since we were little kids. meaning Civil War.
Right.
And they didn't expect that we would not stop until we won.
I mean, the main takeaway is, why do we send our kids to these random corners of the world where nothing good can come of it?
I know.
Because at the time, it feels like you're doing good and you're trying to save innocent people there. And then you step on the wrong foot.
Ugh,
and just, you become the enemy, and you're stuck, and you're
losing
life.
You create so much collateral damage. It's like,
there's no doubt.
It's like World Police Team America.
I get that, and I do feel like it comes from good intentions, but it never seems to print right.
Has to be good people, though, in the board game of Risk.
Yes.
Right? There has to be.
Mike Durant is a big part of this as well, and of course, you probably know that name because Mike Durant was the pilot that got captured for 11 days.
And his face was plastered on U.S. News.
Yes.
Everywhere.
And that video, I still remember seeing that video.
Yes.
And just imagining as his eyes are darting back and forth and he's like, they're trying to get him to say something that they can swing the whole world media against the Americans. And he's,
and meanwhile, his back is
like
broken.
His back is broken. He's in immense pain. He's pretty sure he's about to die. And he's pretty sure nobody can help him. And it just, I mean, he became the most famous man in the world there for a short amount of time. And he's all over this documentary. So I know we've been all over the place here, but this is something you got to watch.
It's yes. So powerful.
The Surviving Black Hawk Down on Netflix. I'm not sure we did it justice. We tried, but it's three parts. You could whip through it tonight if you want. And it is fantastic.
They would just, you know, basically create this huge cloud of dust and everyone would scatter and it would reduce visibility to nothing.
And one thing you have to realize about Somalia and the Somalia forces, if you want to call them that, they weren't very organized, but there was a lot of them. And because of the bombing raid that went wrong a couple of months prior that took out a bunch of old people, Somalian old people, everybody in Mogadishu was anti-American. And apparently, everyone owned an AK-47. It looked like if you were above the age of 12, you had a gun. And I don't think that they expected that.
They had the Second Amendment there, too.
Right.
Did they ever? And so when the Americans...
And they got a hold of rocket launchers.
Yeah, the RPGs. Is that what? Yeah, yeah. So anyway, mission starts. They go in, and there's a reason that this whole thing is known as Black Hawk Down. They take down a chopper within a couple hours of the mission.
Had you ever seen that footage?
No, never. And I couldn't believe it.
I don't think I've ever seen that. Like, they had an actual view, almost looked satellite-ish.
Yeah, so
right? At the end of the first episode?
Ridley Scott is an executive producer, and they used a lot of footage that was shot for the movie for, like, cut scenes and, you know, the helicopter flying overhead. But then there was a lot of this old VHS footage from the time, a lot shot by the Somali guy that we mentioned earlier, but some of it was just, I guess they just found this footage, like surveillance footage or whatever. And yeah, they have actual footage of the chopper going down.
And then the entire mission went from finding a deed, the warlord guy, to we have to rescue our boys that crashed.
Yeah, because immediately, as soon as the helicopter goes down, every militia member in the vicinity is just crashing down on that crash site to try and capture or kill whatever American they can find.
Well, and the wild part of that, too, was the crash was only 2.5 blocks from their initial area, so it was extremely close, yet there were so many people, and it was just such chaos that it was just, it seemed like it was forever away.
And I know that these are the best of the best of the best. I can't believe they didn't all die.
Yeah,
that's all I thought.
They're so outnumbered.
There's
absolutely
thousands of Somalis, it seems like.
Close quarters.
Right, you're in a street, and these buildings are not what you consider like buildings. They're little two-story, three-story max, and every human being in Mogadishu's got a machine gun out the window trying to pop you, and you somehow, the majority of you survive. I know they lost a lot, but you survive. But it's a race to get to that chopper first and to try to get him out of there. And in the meantime, they take down another chopper.
No, there's a similar story in Baghdad in the Iraqi war, and I'm trying to remember which one it was, but it definitely involves a convoy of Humvees going through enemy territory, and it's just complete chaos. What am I thinking about? I'm trying to remember because that was...
Are you thinking of Generation Kill?
No, there was a movie, but regardless, the chaos...
Iron Man.
Shut up, I swear. But the chaos and the hopelessness, and then you got guys wounded, and in this particular case, you know, it's leave no man behind. And so,
yeah, that's what I was going to say, is like, you know, the wounded warrior spots that we run here on the station, they always talk about never leave a wounded warrior behind.
Or a dead body.
Yeah, they were like, don't leave a casualty, don't leave a dead soldier behind.
Probably
we want to bring everyone back, because they were going to be
probably
strung up.
Yes, they knew what would happen to the dead bodies of American soldiers, and which actually did happen, but they put all the wounded and the dead in the Humvee, and now the living soldiers who were still fighting could not fit to get out of there.
Yeah, so they have to hike so alongside the Humvees, and then the Humvees get to the first intersection and just gun it.
Because they're under fire.
Yeah, so they leave the guys behind.
And now the guys who are hiding behind them are totally exposed, and they're screwed again.
And this is the Mogadishu Mile.
Yes.
This is where that term comes from, where these Delta Force and Army Rangers, as you mentioned earlier, they all kind of converge, or a lot of them converge, into this house, Mogadishu house, where these people are living, and this is their base and their fort. And they're like, well, this is it. Is that the cut we have here with the guy, the Delta Force guy is like, I'm dead.
I felt bad.
Well, it's about the family that's with them, and it's juxtaposition there.
I felt bad for them, you know, like, sorry. I'm sorry we're here, man. Sorry that they're shooting at us and it's destroying your house. Looking at faces, and then I started wondering, like, what do you do here? What's your job? I mean, you go to school. And I'm wondering, like, what's life like here? Little spikes of humanity in the center of killing people over and over again. Then you get a little spike of humanity. You're like, damn, I don't want to look at this. Let me go back to the window and shoot people. This is harder than shooting people. They try to put humanity into war. It's just not good.
That guy's so awesome in this, Delta Force guy.
He also looks like a guy you shouldn't mess with to this day.
Oh, my God.
You know,
scares the crap out of me.
I know. He kind of gave me, like, Ken Stabler vibes.
You know what?
A little bit, yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
No, it's just, I mean, how many times have we seen some version of that going back to World War One and World War Two that... Like, sometimes the worst thing a soldier can do is kind of realize the dudes on the other side love their girlfriends, too, and their moms and their babies. And
they got
you
jobs,
know,
are going to work the next day and all that.
Like the Christmas Day truce in World War One, where they ended up kind of playing soccer with the Germans. You know, it's this idea, like, you know, these guys aren't that bad, you know. It's like, what are we doing out here? Shouldn't we all go home and hang out with our girlfriends again, but that's not what you signed up for, and that's not what the world's about, I guess. And he's like, they're literally in a house with a newborn, and the mom is nursing the baby right around the corner, and this dude's unloading his gun to save his life into the streets of Mogadishu. I always want to say Mogadishu, and that's not right. But
well, and then they found the family whose house it was, and they found the baby that survived, who's now 30 years old.
Yes,
and they interviewed her. Dude, it's so good.
Like,
it's...
how do you do that? Making a documentary, like,
how about the guy though? The guy that he was the one that, you know, was, I don't want to say he was like the main lieutenant of Adid, the bad guy, but he flipped whenever the U.S., you know, bombed and killed a bunch of grandpas. He flipped, and he's still pissed. That guy, like,
yeah,
he's like, look, they didn't realize that this is what we have been doing. He's like, they were babies. They brought their babies over, meaning the Army Rangers. They brought their 22-year-olds. We had been doing this since we were little kids. Meaning Civil War.
Right.
And they didn't expect that we would not stop until we won.
I mean, the main takeaway is, why do we send our kids to these random corners of the world where nothing good can come of it?
I know.
Because at the time, it feels like you're doing good and you're trying to save innocent people there, and then you step on the wrong foot. You become the enemy, and you're stuck, and you're losing life.
You create so much collateral damage. It's like,
there's no doubt.
It's like World Police Team America.
I get that, and I do feel like it comes from good intentions, but it never seems to print right.
Has to be good people, though, in the board game of Risk.
Yes.
Right? There has to be.
Mike Durant is a big part of this as well, and of course, you probably know that name because Mike Durant was the pilot that got captured for 11 days.
And his face was plastered on U.S. News.
Yes.
Everywhere.
And that video, I still remember seeing that video and just imagining as his eyes are darting back and forth and he's like, they're trying to get him to say something that they can swing the whole world media against the Americans. And he's,
and meanwhile, his back is
like
broken.
His back is broken. He's in immense pain. He's pretty sure he's about to die. And he's pretty sure nobody can help him. And it just, I mean, he became the most famous man in the world there for a short amount of time. And he's all over this documentary. So I know we've been all over the place here, but this is something you got to watch.
It's so powerful.
The Surviving Black Hawk Down on Netflix. I'm not sure we did it justice. We tried, but it's three parts. You could whip through it tonight if you want. And it is fantastic.